Today's show has something for pre-meds looking to prepare for the MCAT and for MBA wannabes interested in Harvard Business School. Listen in. Hello and welcome. Thanks for joining me for this 145th episode of Admission Straight Talk, the podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion is to help you get to that delightful instant when you can jump up and down shouting, "Yes, I'm in," and not only in, but in at the best program for you. This is a time of year when a lot of pre-meds are preparing for the MCAT or worrying about their MCAT score after having taken the MCAT. And we have two upcoming events that will help you prepare for your MCAT. The first is this podcast, and we'll get to that in just a second. The second is the webinar that today's guest, Alec Lee, will present on the MCAT and MCAT prep on April 5th. You can register for the webinar at exhibit.com/MCAT. I'll also include a link in the show notes at exhibit.com/145. Now, today's guest is an MCAT expert. Alec Lee co-founded the online prep course MPrep and is a man of varied interests. He graduated from the University of British Columbia in 2011 with a bachelor's in biotechnology and a minor in philosophy. When I last spoke to him 2 years ago, he had been admitted to Harvard Business School's class of 2016. He completed the first year, the required curriculum at HBS or the RC, only to decide to take a leave of absence from HBS. He writes about himself, "With a strong business and life sciences background, I am passionate about ventures in biotech, healthcare, and education." And we're going to learn about his venture in healthcare education. Alec, welcome to Admission Straight Talk.
Thanks for having me.
Pleasure to have you. Although you previously were on Admission Straight Talk, and we're going to link to the earlier show from today's show notes at exhibit.com/145, could you just provide an overview of what MPrep offers to pre-meds?
Sure. So MPrep is essentially a full-service MCAT prep company. We started off with an MCAT question of the day, and we've been really committed to that product. We were essentially the first company to start doing that back in 2008. And the project at the time was just a way for us to practice ourselves for the MCAT and also just help students prepare on a daily basis and not procrastinate the way that MCAT prep is often done.
Procrastination.
And so that's been running, yeah, I know, a crazy concept, right?
Right.
So that's been going almost for the last 8 years now.
Wow.
And we grew that product, because people really like that, into passage-based preparation, which is really important for the MCAT, obviously, and a full-length course that helps students prepare from start to finish as well, that really focuses on strategies for the exam.
And that's MPrep, right?
Yeah, that's what
MPrep. The QBank, and then you have the prep course, right?
Yeah, you know, we have a couple of other, you know, free tools here and there. You know, we have a med school's database, which tracks admission stats over time, and an MCAT retake calculator so that students can see, you know, their chances of improving their score and things like that. But our primary focus really is on developing content for the MCAT.
Okay. How has the course changed as a result of MCAT 2015, the new MCAT?
So we started working on that more than 3 years ago when the AAMC first released sort of in preliminary information about what the exam would look like. And I'd say the biggest change has been around the content. Thankfully, the AAMC didn't make significant changes to the way that they focus on content and the way that questions are written. So the goal is still really applying content and thinking critically about underlying concepts that students should have known from undergrad courses. But where they really made the biggest changes is in adding a substantial amount of content. The psychology, sociology section is brand new.
Right.
They had a lot of biochem. And so that's where we spent, I'd say, the bulk of our time in terms of rebuilding the course. We did rebuild it from scratch because we realized that there were a lot of things that we could have improved on. And I think that we did go through an additional iteration of upgrades within the last 6 months or so, once we had a much better sense of what the exam was actually like compared to what our expectations were based off of the AAMC's information. And so a lot of those expectations that were sort of realizations only after they launched the exam was the really intense focus on the biochem side. Even within topics like chemistry and physics, a lot of it really ties back to molecular biology and things like that. So there were some upgrades that we made recently for that as well. But from a strategic side, not that much has changed for the MCAT. And so we were able to fold a lot of the previous content back into the new content. And that was a little bit refreshing, because I think that fundamentally the MCAT does a good job in its goals in terms of testing critical thinking.
Mm-hmm. Now, is your course focused mostly on test-taking strategies or specific strategies for taking the MCAT as opposed to really reviewing the content, the subject matter, or do you do a little bit of both?
Yeah, so the syllabus for the MCAT is public. You know, students can go download that from the AMC's website. It's like 180 pages long or something like that.
Right.
And, you know, everyone knows what's on the exam. And so we already knew, and it's always been the case, that there's a ton of free resources online for going through, you know, what's testable on the exam. And, of course, textbooks are pretty cheap and, you know, even free in the library. So our goal was never to reinvent the wheel on that front. We do go through the syllabus, and there's nothing that's missing from the course on a content review side, but really the goal is to be a value add in terms of thinking about how to play the game of the MCAT, because it really is very different from how a lot of undergrad science coursework is built and how a lot of those, you know, midterms and final exams really think about the content. And so from that perspective, I'd say it really is a strategy-based course in that that's what we want to deliver. But with that said, you know, it's not just we talk about some test-taking strategies and then you're done. We really do go through the content from beginning to end.
Okay, great. What do you think students need to do differently to do well on the new MCAT?
The biggest one that comes to mind for me is having more preparation up front. Previously, you know, we were recommending students reserve 2 to 4 months to really give themselves a good runway to prepare. Obviously, that depends a lot on the individual student. But now, students can easily add 50% to those numbers. I really like to see students come in with, you know, 6 months before they need to take the exam to really start thinking about it. And they don't have to go at it full force, but at least so that they have some expectations 6 months out about what they're going to need to be doing and how much time they're going to need to spend, especially if they're full-time students. It really will be beneficial for them to have that kind of runway. So that's the biggest one. And I think more than ever, missing certain prerequisites is an issue for a lot of students just because they've added a number of courses that are very helpful for the exam. In terms of sociology and psychology and sure, more biochem stuff. And so it's increasing the case that students are coming to the table missing a certain prerequisite here or there. And I'd say that if students can, they should get as much of it under their belt before they take the MCAT as possible.
Right.
That coursework is really helpful for creating a foundation, especially in the biological sciences side. And that, I think, is true now more than it was before.
Okay. Now let's change topics a little bit. You wrote a fantastic guest blog post for Accepted in December entitled, "Should I Retake the MCAT? I really recommend anyone considering a retake or who's dissatisfied with their MCAT score read the article, which I'll link to from accepted.com/147. And I should tell everybody, including you, Alec, that I am rarely impressed or rave about blog posts, okay? My assistant, when I was raving about it to her, was like, gee, what got into you? So it really is an outstanding post.
Thank you.
You argued, you're welcome. You argued there that the decision to retake the MCAT should be based on the scores you need, not the scores you want. What's the difference?
So I think pre-meds, perhaps understandably, are overachievers. And I think there's a strong sense that students want an affirmation for themselves that they are better than everyone else, or at least, you know, in the upper echelons of pre-meds. And so a lot of people come to the table wanting a top score, not because that's what they need to actually get into med school, But because that's sort of another affirmation for themselves about their performance. And I don't actually think there's anything wrong with that. I just think students need to recognize that the game that they're playing with the MCAT really ultimately is getting into med school,
right.
I imagine, for most people. Pretty soon the game will be boards, but for now, looking at what it actually takes to get into med school from the perspective of the MCAT, it's really not as high as students expect. Now, if your sights are set on something like Johns Hopkins or Harvard Med School, then yeah, you're going to have a really strong score. But even then, you don't see averages in the 99.9 percentile. Those schools have averages that are certainly somewhere in the 95th to 98th percentile. But if you think about what that ultimately means, it means they're accepting quite a number of students who have scores below that threshold.
Of course.
And I think that students have this expectation that, you know, if I'm going to get into a particular school, I have to do better than their average, and that's just statistically not the case. And why I think that advice is more true now than it was before is because the MCAT is more of a wild card, especially in these early years of its launch. You know, it's only a year old. We barely know how schools are going to be thinking about the MCAT. They, to some extent, probably don't really have it all down either. And so schools are really going to be de-emphasizing the importance of a score here. It's always been the case that med school admissions is a bit of a crapshoot with the low admissions percentages. And so it's obvious that there's a lot more that they look at than just top MCAT scores.
Right.
And so for that reason, I think students just need to be, it doesn't mean that you shouldn't have your sights set high. It just means that you should understand the motivations behind it. And also on the tail end, understand what that means in terms of whether a retake is really worthwhile for you once you actually find out what your score was.
I think you should set your sights high as you're studying. Go for the gold.
Yes.
Go for the highest score you can get.
Absolutely.
But then once you get that score, then you have to analyze it very coldly and realistically in terms of your goals. And what are the factors applicants should consider when deciding whether to retake or not? We've kind of said, well, don't weigh the MCAT so heavily, but what should they consider?
I think that you need to look at the MCAT in, you know, sort of this holistic applicant sense. The pair mm-hmm. of your GPA with the MCAT is absolutely critical. Mm-hmm. It's one of the pieces of information that the AAMC publishes, which really isn't that extensive. And so I think that the fact that they emphasize this very heavily and provide quite a bit of data about the admissions percentages based off of the MCAT GPA pair just goes to show the GPA is absolutely just as critical, in fact, if not more critical. And so you should absolutely look at what your GPA is and how that would affect, you know, how they look at your MCAT. Sometimes students need to have a really strong MCAT score to make up for their GPA. In mm-hmm. other cases, they don't. And so that's one thing. But another thing is, you know, what schools you're planning on applying to.
Of course.
Whether you're committed to, I want to be an MD and I want to be a doctor, or whether your goal is, I want to be a Harvard doctor. Because I think those are two different goals to set, but ultimately, for the vast majority of pre-meds, the goal really is, I want to be a doctor and I want to work with patients. And there's a lot of schools that are absolutely going to be fantastic preparation in that. And so as you sort of start to think about, is the MCAT worth retaking, what you should really be thinking about is the time that I'm going to invest in retaking, you know, restudying for the exam, is that really the best way that I can spend it, given that there's a lot of other things that matter for med school, but there's a lot of other things that matter in life, too, than just studying for another exam.
Right, right, for sure. And I think you kind of answered the next question, but I'm going to ask it anyway just so that it can be explicit. Do you feel that the GPA and other factors will be weighted more heavily until all medical schools are exclusively on the new MCAT and kind of have some experience with it, maybe are more comfortable with it?
I do. I have to say that that's a bit of gut feel and also a bit of feedback from schools as well. I think that that's only natural. It's not the first time that an exam has undergone substantial revisions and that it's been de-emphasized subsequently as an admissions factor. But it will come back.
Yeah.
It will absolutely make a comeback. But especially for this upcoming year and for the near future, I think that students frankly can worry a little bit less about the MCAT than they did before.
Okay, great. And this is coming from somebody who depends on MCAT prep. I think that's very insightful.
Exactly.
Right. What's coming down the pike for MPrep?
Well, the big thing that we're working on right now is a full set of practice exams, full-length practice exams. So when the AAMC switched over to the new format, they didn't really leave us with a lot of the same level of practice content that they had before. They had 8 full-length practice exams for the old MCAT. Now there are only 2. And so I think there's been a huge scramble from students to get their hands on more full-length practice exams and also for companies to, provide them. And so that's one thing that we wanted to start to do as we think about what makes a difference to students. So we're about to launch our first 3, and we're hoping to get the second 3 launched within the next couple of months as well. And I'm really excited for those because I think that the content that we had, for example, in our Q Bank and from the question of the day that's sort of been compiled into our database are, in my humbly biased opinion, second to none. But we've done so much revamping and so much development of new content that I think these ones should, if all goes well, be indistinguishable from the AAMC content.
Okay, great. Now, before we turn to Alec Lee, MCAT expert, to Alec Lee, MBA, do you have any last bits of wisdom or advice for pre-meds about to take the MCAT, other than sign up for MPrep?
Well, I think that I'd leave pre-meds with 2 things. One is absolutely start early, and not just like
Yes.
a, oh, I know I need to start early, but I mean like really, this is something that is going to make a big difference for you for test day and for preparation. And I'd say the other thing is to really just let the MCAT be an experience that you prepare for, and let it to be one of those. Let it be a rite of passage for you, because it is for so many people, and people sort of approach it very begrudgingly. And I think it's important to really take it for what it is just this important step, and to think about it as an opportunity for them to have this under their belt, if nothing else. And your attitude towards it really makes a huge difference.
Okay, and certainly in terms of the first point you made about applying early, not that I disagree with the second point, but certainly the first point about applying early is something that everybody who knows anything about medical admissions talks about. Former admissions directors, current admissions directors. We actually have a post, it's an interview with an applicant who was accepted to medical school by October of this year and had 7 acceptances. And he was just adamant that he got his application in the minute MCAS opened. Very, he
Yeah.
turned around all the secondaries, he got his MCAT out of the way ahead of time, just very, very determined to have every early advantage that he could. And it paid off for him big time. He knew he was going to
Absolutely.
win, So I'm going to link to that again from the show notes. At accept.com/147. And in terms of having, I think, an appropriate mindset and perspective on the MCAT as a rite of passage, something, it's not going to, it's not a test of you as a human being. It's a rite of passage on the route to medical school to be followed up by many other exams later on once you get in. I think that's also a very healthy attitude. Now,
I can add something a little bit
sure.
more concrete if that was a little bit on the fluffier side.
Okay.
I think as students think about how to prepare for the exam, if a course you know, taking an MCAT course is on your radar. Of course, I would recommend looking at our MPrep e-course, but I think one of the most important questions that students can ask in whether a course, any course is right for them, is to get the track record of the instructor, of the tutor, in helping other students be successful for the exam. I think that there's a lot of smoke and mirrors in advertising MCAT courses, and one of the things that we really try to focus on is to say, what we did on the MCAT is not relevant for, in terms of our scores, is not relevant for students as they think about who should be helping them prepare. And the reason it's not relevant is because we all know really smart people who have no concept of how to coach people, how to, you know, explain concepts and things like that. And so knowing that someone got a near perfect score doesn't just means that they're smart, right? And just means that they eventually worked hard. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be a good coach and a good fit for you.
Right.
So I think it's really important for students to get a sense of what's the experience that this person has had with preparing students. And a lot of the times it's the case that someone might not have any experience at all, and that's something that you should know with full disclosure from any company.
Okay, that's a really very good concrete piece of advice. Thank you. Now, we've been talking a lot about changes in the MCAT and changes at MPrep, but things have changed quite a bit for you too, Alex, since 2014 when we last spoke. At the time, you had just been accepted to Harvard Business School and were planning to start in fall 2014. And you did start at HBS then, and you completed the first year required curriculum. And then what happened? What did you like best about your year at HBS, but what happened then?
Well, in terms of what I liked about it, first off, I absolutely love the program. I have no reservations about and no regrets about my choice to go. And my decision to take time off wasn't born out of any level of dissatisfaction with the experience that I had, but it was more the opposite. I can say that one of the things that I enjoyed absolutely the most is the network and the friends that I made there. Mm-hmm. The people that I had exposure to were unlike any concentration of talented, motivated people that I've ever had the privilege to be exposed to, and these are people that I think are really down to earth and are just good people, and they're great to be around. So I love my classmates, and mm-hmm. that was the biggest challenge in leaving, is in risking losing some of the opportunity to develop some of those friendships. But ultimately, I realized that first year goes by really fast, which is, I think, not a surprise for anybody who's gone through an MBA, mm-hmm. And that I wasn't really making thoughtful choices about how I wanted to spend my time. You know, I realized that I'm never going to be able to go back, you know, not as a student, and that I want to make the right choices about what courses I want to take, what professors I want to get to know, you know, what clubs to be a part of or not to be a part of, you know, whether I want to continue down this entrepreneurial path or whether, you know, I want to go work on a corporate for a corporate company. You know, those are some things that I don't think that I gave adequate thought to. And HBS is really generous with students. They give you up to 5 years essentially unconditionally to take a leave of absence,
really?
And they come back and continue. Yeah. And so I thought, you know, there's really almost no downside except for, you know, the risk that I'll, you know, no longer be developing these friendships as closely as I was. But the feedback that I've gotten is that EC year, at least at HBS, is very different from RC year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't have the same classes with all the same people, and so it's a lot more spread out socially. And I think that I've maintained the connections with the people that I really wanted to, and so I don't have any regrets with my choice to take some time off and explore other projects and figure out what exactly I want to work on afterwards. And I think that when I am ready to go back, that I'll be able to make much better decisions about how to make the best use of my last year.
Would you recommend that MBAs kind of think about how they want to use their MBA time so that they arrive knowing more about that?
Yeah, I was skeptical about that advice when I had heard it prior to starting. So many people that I talked to said, look, you should really start thinking about what you want to get out of this experience before you even show up, because those are people who get the most out of it. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, well, you know, why are there so many career changers then? I mean, why are there so many people who just want to explore what their interests are? And so, because that was me. And I think that that advice absolutely is true. The people who know exactly what they came for know how to spend their time, and they get exactly that out of it.
Yes.
And I was a little bit less prepared on that front. And so, yeah, I think it's critical that you think about it up front, but it's not necessarily the case that, for example, you're not ready for an MBA if you don't know what you want to get out of it. I just think that people should really do some soul searching up front to make sure that when they do get there, that they're spending the right time and spending time the way that they want to.
Yeah, I personally think it's critical. You are fortunate that Harvard does have this policy. I don't know how many schools do.
Very fortunate.
Right. I also think that one of the big differences between a graduate management education and graduate school in general and undergraduate programs are that you have the cliche about college that it's a time to find yourself, to explore different interests. Graduate
yeah.
school is very different in that regard. You're supposed to have been found by the time you end up in graduate school.
Right.
And I think that the business programs, because they are so short, they're only 2 years, and because the internship typically plays such a major role in post-MBA placement, you really have to have an idea of what you want to get out of that program professionally. It doesn't mean you have to be locked in, but there's, and I've said this many times, there's a big difference between having direction and being clueless. The person who's clueless is like a broken weather vane. It just spins. The person with direction, well, they have direction. They can still shift with the wind. They can shift as different opportunities become available, but they do have something, some direction and some idea of how they want to spend the 2 years. It's costing them a very pretty penny. But I'm glad that for you, you realized you were going to benefit from the time off, and when you go back, and I'm assuming here that you intend to go back, am I correct?
I do, absolutely.
Okay. Now, when you go back, you'll have that direction, and you'll know exactly what you want to get out of it. Now, do you feel that your Harvard Business School experience so far has helped you in running MPrep?
I do. There were a lot of situations I'd have to think about any concrete examples that come to mind, but there were a lot of times when I sat in class and thought, I dealt with something exactly like this when, you know, I was negotiating a particular contract, or
really?
You know, had a dispute with a content provider or a supplier or an employee or something like that, and where having a little bit more framed way of thinking about it was really beneficial. It has, and it's been a couple of times, a couple of important cases that since leaving, I have thought about cases that we read and that we discussed, and that sort of helped me frame how to think about, you know, my approach. I don't think that the education is analogous to that of undergrad, you know, at least with a science background. It's very much, it's borderline vocational. You know, you
right.
have a specific set of skills that you want to impart upon students, and then they are qualified if they have left with those skills. But the case method is very different. It's much more it's much fluffier and holistic, and there are some frameworks to get out of it. And I think that's more so the case for EC year than RC year. So I have yet to have those particular experiences. But it's much more holistic from the case method. And so I can't point to, oh, well, there's this framework that helped me with this situation, but it is very broadly sort of, this is how I should think about some of these dilemmas. And so, yeah, I think it has been very helpful.
Good.
But I think that the value will be much greater down the line than it is, you know, very immediately.
Okay. And just to fill in listeners, the RC stands for required curriculum. It's the first year curriculum at Harvard Business School. And EC is extracurricular curriculum at Harvard Business School, which is the second year. The first year is entirely required. The second year is entirely their elective curriculum. So that makes sense. What do you intend to focus on in the second year, or do you know yet?
I don't know. I still haven't even decided if I'm going to go back this fall.
Right.
So it's a little bit early for me right now. I think that I want to see. I'm working on some side projects, and you know, I'm still working very much on putting out a lot more content and working very hard on MPrep. And so I think that I want to get to a little bit more of a stable situation before I really commit to some of this soul searching. I was thinking about doing some traveling, things like that. So I don't think that I'll be ready this year, but yeah, unfortunately, I can't quite tell you yet what that's going to be.
That's okay. I can ask you again in a year or two.
Yeah.
Okay. That's great, though. You know, you already mentioned doing some soul searching before starting the MBA, but do you have any other or additional advice for those considering an MBA?
You know, a lot of people show up with very clear life goals and expectations for the program. And I think an MBA is something that you get out of it, whatever it is that you really set your mind to and commit yourself to. Because there isn't just one HBS experience or imagine an MBA experience. And so I think those people who know exactly what it is they want to get out of it, we'll get that out of it, and you should have confidence in the fact that you will get value out of the program. I absolutely loved it. But on the flip side, if you're not exactly sure what your 10-year, 20-year life plan is, that's okay too. There are a lot of people who show up and say, you know, I just don't want to work in finance anymore. I want to explore entrepreneurship. I want to explore, sure, you know, retail, a ton of other things, and sure, I think all of that is okay, and there are other people like you who want to just explore other things and to be okay with that.
Well, I think D. Leopold likes to talk about, and to a certain extent, poo-poo, laminated life plans, and
right.
I think that's her expression, actually, and I agree with her. I don't think you need a laminated life plan or a 10 or 20-year plan or even a 5-year plan, but I do think it's really important that you have some idea of direction, some idea of what you
yes.
want to get out of the program. Because otherwise, again, I think you're going to be that broken weather vane spinning around. Okay, Alec, I want to thank you so much for joining me for this podcast. Where can listeners learn more about MPrep and the QBank?
So you can come to mcatquestion.com, and they'll find all of the links at the top of the page.
Okay, great. And we're going to link from the show notes at exhibit.com/145 to the MCAT eCourse and MCAT question of the day, as well as mcatquestion.com, which is actually the URL. And we're also going to link to the upcoming MCAT webinar that Alec will present at Accepted, as well as some of the other resources discussed during the show. If you want to go directly to register for the MCAT webinar, you can do so at exhibit.com/MCAT. Otherwise, for the other things, it's exhibit.com/145. Listener, thank you too for taking the time to join me for the 145th episode. If you found the show worthwhile, please make sure you don't miss any others. We have subscribe links in the show notes at exhibit.com/145. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I'm your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.